Recall last Sunday morning about worldliness. We talked a little bit about worldliness in general, and then we talked a good bit about immodesty. We're going to continue this thought this morning, but before we get to a specific aspect of worldliness, I want us to look at Titus 2:11 through 14. For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in the present age, looking for the blessed hope and glorious appearing of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from every lawless deed, and purify for himself his own special people, zealous for good works. Those who are indeed zealous for good works will not want to engage in worldly activities because they know and understand that worldliness is basically ungodliness and worldly lust. And we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age. Therefore, we cannot afford to be engaged in worldliness or any worldly activities. So we're going to talk this morning about a particular aspect of worldliness, and that is dancing. Dancing is probably one of the more, as far as the world is concerned, one of the something that we shouldn't even be complaining about. It's so accepted in the world today, teenagers actually encouraged to engage in dancing, and we'll talk more about that in just a moment, but I'm talking about dancing in public and private as a form of recreation involving people who are not married to one another. I'm not talking about a husband and wife dancing alone in the privacy of their own home. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. But I'm talking about public and private as a form of recreation involving people who are not married to one another. Well, what is dancing? Well, basically to move the feet and body rhythmically, usually in time to music. As one fellow said, I don't mind you hugging my wife, I just better hear some music playing. Well, that's what a person is doing generally when he is engaged, especially in this form of dance, represented in this article, the waltz. You know, he's holding another body close to his. If he's dancing with somebody to whom he's not married, he's holding another man's wife close to his body, and she's holding a man, another woman's husband close to her body, and somebody has no problem with that as long as there's music playing. But they wouldn't want it to go on. You know, music stop, y'all better stop. Because they understand, really, that if the music alone justifies it, then the action itself is wrong. And so I'm talking about dancing in public and private as a form of recreation involving people who are not married to one another. Well, why is dancing wrong? With this proviso, why is dancing, as I am talking about this morning, wrong? And as I mentioned, not wrong between a husband and wife in the privacy of their own home, with their shades on, plans on. Nobody else there. So why is dancing in other context wrong? Well, there are a number of reasons why dancing is wrong or why dancing should be considered by each individual Christian as an act of worldliness. And one of them is, it is at the very least questionable. If a person has to ask, you know, is it right or wrong? Isn't it, you know, it's questionable. If it's questionable in your mind, you should not engage in it, even if you're not convinced absolutely that it's wrong. Several years ago, I heard Jerry Clower. Most of us know Jerry Clower, knew Jerry Clower, knew who he was, and heard many of his performances where he talked about real events, I understand, in the life of himself and his family and friends, and made millions and millions of dollars because he could tell these accounts in such a way as to just cause you to laugh. But he had a serious moment too, a serious, I wouldn't really call it a performance, where he talked about his rule of thumb when thinking about things that might not ought to be done. And this is from an article I found on the internet. There was more to the article, but I just wanted to reduce it here. to two slides. To summarize Jerry Clower's rule of thumb, let me leave you with Jerry's own words. This is a brief transcript of him recounting a talk he gave a group of college students several years ago. And I don't know who wrote the article, but here's what Jerry had said. What is right or wrong? Do you ask other people? Do you agree with your, do you argue with yourself? Do you feel uneasy when you are about, when you do it? Can you give thanks and say, Lord, I thank you for providing this for me? If you can't, you better watch out. You're fixing to mess up. And I tell you, I really like that thought of Jerry Clark. If it's questionable, you ought not to do it. And surely in the minds of a lot of people, it's at least questionable whether it's right to hold the body of a person to whom you're not married close to yours, whether there's music or not. Now, not all dancing involves holding a body of another person close to you. We're going to talk about some of those other things in a few moments. So we're not talking merely about waltzing, but dancing that involves two people who are not married to one another, that falls under the category of those things we're going to talk about. And I'm not saying that there's no dance that could be unworldly. I'm just saying most dances that I've ever heard about fall into these categories. In Romans 14 and verse 23, but he who doubts is condemned to be eat, because he does not eat from faith, for whatever is not from faith is sin. Now this is what Jerry Clower was saying. If it's questionable, if you have questions about it, don't do it. Or to paraphrase this, but he who doubts is condemned if he dances, because he does not dance from faith, or whatever is not from faith is sin. If you've got questions, don't do it. I got a little article, the first in the series, on the conscience that I started this morning. And while your conscience cannot be an infallible guide, or should not be an infallible guide, you do need to listen to your conscience. And that's what Jerry was saying, and that's what Paul is saying here. If your conscience bothers you, don't do it. And if you can't do it of faith, or from faith, with the confidence that it's all right, then you ought not to be engaged in an activity. So that's just one reason. The second reason is it breaks down barriers of modesty. This is probably the reason that I never did dance, but what I was already drinking first. And of course, we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks too, if not next week. Some people have to break down their inhibitions before they dance. But then when they dance, it breaks down further barriers, barriers of modesty. Look at some quotes here. I will say that I do not believe a woman can walk virtuously and walk well, for she must yield her person completely to her partner. And that's from a former dancing teacher. That's not from a preacher. A former dancing teacher said that. Dancing is an exciting and pleasurable recreation as it affords a partial satisfaction to the sex impulse. This statement was made by an outstanding female educator in defense of modern dancing. During the mid to late 80s, the Lambada was called safe sex. So I've got this article from the Sentinel Miami Bureau, February 4th, 1990, written by Maya Bell, talking about the Lambada, which was just coming of age then. With their legs interlocking as they move across the dance floor, Jackie Morales and Joaquin Boo look almost like a zebra, her black tights alternating with his white pants. This, however, is no zoo. It is the Lambada, the dance craze now taking Miami by storm, or is it by steam? Imported from the coast of Brazil by way of Europe, the Lambada is hot, so hot, the morality watchdogs are upset. Really upset. Listen to Ralph Storrs, president of the Miami and Homestead chapters of the Anti-Pornography American Family Association, described the hip-grinding gyrations now appearing rather routinely on dance floors throughout Miami. I don't have that quote, but just hearing the quote described is enough for me. And we do have a quote here in a little bit that talks about those those things. Matter of fact, since I've been in Lincoln, another dance has come to play. I haven't heard about it in a while, called the Dirty Dog. And it doesn't take much imagination for you to know the steps of that dance, because that's what they look like. Why is it wrong? Another third reason why it's wrong, it destroys spirituality. It has been said that the dancing foot and the praying knee seldom grow on the same way. In Matthew 5, verse 28, but I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her already in his heart. And I say, it is difficult to engage in dance without that occurring. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's difficult. Mark 7, 22 and 23, from within, out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adultery, fornication, murder, theft, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile the man. I want to emphasize the evil thoughts and the lewdness. It is very difficult to engage in modern dancing without those evil thoughts and that lewdness coming to the fore. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. It is lascivious or lewd in nature, which is why it destroys spirituality. A doctor says, I attack the modern dance as a reversion toward savagery. As a medical man, I flatly charge that modern social dancing is fundamentally sinful and evil. I charge that dancing's charm is based upon sex appeal. I charge that it is the most insidious of the maneuvers preliminary to sex betrayal. And yet it is considered by many to be harmless. Just a harmless form of recreation. A Jewish rabbi writes, modern dancing is popular not because of its grace, but because of its appeal to our lower nature. A Methodist bishop writes, I deem the modern dance as unmitigated evil because in most of its forms it is vulgar and warns directly against the claims of the spiritual life. A Presbyterian preacher says, dancing leads to forgetfulness of God. And it, again, it doesn't take a scholar to figure out why that is if you've ever been on a dance floor. Matthew chapter 14, verses 6 through 8. But when Herod's birthday was celebrated, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod. Therefore, he promised with an oath to give her whatever she might ask. So she, having been prompted by her mother, said, give me John the Baptist's head here on a platter. Now you might remember, and just in case you don't, I'm going to tell you, John the Baptist, the forerunner of Christ, preached against the adulterous relationship of Herod and Herodias. Herodias had been Herod's brother's wife, and the law under which they lived forbade a man to marry his brother's wife. And so it was adultery. And John pointed that out, and Herodias did not like that. And she insisted that John first be arrested, and Herod did that, but Herod kind of sort of liked John. He didn't want to put him to death, but when this occurred, this gave Herodias the upper hand because her daughter goes and says, you know, what should I ask for? And so her mother said, you ask for John the Baptist's head on a silver platter. And the king gave it to her. The king was sorry, nevertheless, because of the oath, and because of those who sat with him, he commanded it to be given to her, so he sent and had John beheaded in prison. He'd have egg on his face. He promised to give her up to half of his kingdom. He couldn't deny her anything less than half of his kingdom because of his own promise. And so he had John the Baptist beheaded. Again, the dancing foot and the praying knee seldom grow on the same leg. If the daughter of Herodias had been praying for Herod instead of dancing for him, John the Baptist would not have lost his head. But she wasn't praying for him. She wasn't concerned about his soul. She was concerned about his being entertained. She was concerned about his pleasure, and she did please him with the lasciviousness and lewdness of the dance. And again, what it led to in Herod is indicative that it was a lewd dance. So those are four reasons right there. Five, it keeps bad company. Dancing does. We believe that investigation will show that drinking, gambling, and prostitution are sisters of the dance. Originating in the houses of ill fame in New Orleans a few decades ago, and I don't know when this was written, probably in the 60s, modern ballroom dancing has swept through the country like wildfire for one reason only. You can take the dance out of the body house, but you cannot take the base nature out of the dance. It is still lasciviousness, such a music, whether you find it in the roadhouse or in the parlor. And it's sad. Sad. With a capital S, capital A, capital D, that churches across the land will sponsor dances. I hope and pray that no churches of Christ have done that. There are a lot of things they have done that they didn't have any business to it. But we've all heard of church clubs, those were dancing, took place. The New World Dictionary defines lasciviousness as lustful, wanton, exciting lust. So anything that is lustful, wanting, and exciting lust is considered lasciviousness. In the New King James Version, lewdness is the equivalent of lasciviousness. In Galatians 5:19-21, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. And so, yes, much, and we still haven't got to the big quote. But lewdness is depicted in the dance. Now, certainly murder is not, but it keeps that company. That's the point we're making. All of these are works of the flesh. He lists 17 of them, and then he says, and the like. And so this is not an exhaustive list. There's a similar list in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. But it's different. Not the same. A list of things will keep you out of the kingdom. And so neither list is intended by Paul or by the Holy Spirit to be an exhaustive list. And both of them add and the like, or and such like. So there are other things that could very well fall into those categories that he simply did not mention. Now, with that having been said, a humanistic sociologist, not a preacher, not even a Christian, not even a believer in God, but a humanist who believes that humans are the highest order of being, a humanist sociologist writes, this process of mate selection, and he's not talking about finding a husband or a wife, may be aided by specifically erotic displays such as the body movements of dancing, where sensuous actions accentuate the gender signals and the individual qualities of the potential mate. Again, not potential husband or wife. He goes on to say, sexual intention movements and mimic copulatory actions also appear on the dance floor, helping to suggest the patterns of behavior yet to come. And that's from that book of his. Several years ago, I was talking to James Shearer about the evolution of his thinking on that particular subject, because when he was in college, where he first became a Christian, David Livingston, I believe it was, he really liked to dance. But then some said, well, he's wrong, he's dependent. Until he remembered why he liked to dance with a particular girl. Now, I don't remember. I don't know that he ever told me why he liked to dance with that particular girl. The fact that it led him to believe that dancing was wrong was sufficient for me. And I know what would pass through my mind, what did pass through my mind back when I would involve myself in dancing. Again, I never danced but what I'd already been drinking. Because I just, there's other people there. But that's what dancing is, and that's what goes through the minds of people who are involved, even when they don't embrace one another. It's those movements that suggest the pattern of behavior yet to come as they choose their temporary mate. You probably heard it said, before I show you this next slide, and maybe it's a song, I could have danced all night. Well, back in the 70s, I saw a sign similar to this one. I should have danced all night. No, you should not have been dancing in the first place. A partial satisfaction of the sixth impulse is often not enough. And so oftentimes, these high school problems, afterward, they start paying off. Why? Because they've only had a partial satisfaction of the sexual impulse. And the males, at least, want more than that. So it keeps bad company. It can also lead to other sins. In Ephesians 4, 17 through 19, this I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling, have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. In other words, from lewdness it goes to all uncleanness and greediness. In other words, you just want more and more of that kind of activity, more and more of the things that are suggested on the dance floor. But you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man, which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. For we had spent our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. Well, if you're a Christian, you realize you spent enough of your past lifetime doing those things, and you repented of those things. You repented of the world. That's when you became a Christian. Why go back into the world by engaging in worldly activities, whether it's dancing, whether it's immodesty, or some other act or activity of worldliness? And yes, some people go, well, you're such a prude, you know, that's the evil of you because you don't, I don't know whether maybe he was just trying to pull me into the bank, I don't know. One of our customers drinking from, you're not going to tell me it's wrong for Christians to drink. Well, yeah, it's wrong for a Christian to drink any to consume alcoholic beverages. Now, that's not saying it's wrong to take medication. But consume alcoholic beverages as in a drinking party, see, that's wrong. It's getting the end of a few drinks. That's a drinking party. Now, that's condemned specifically right there in 1 Peter 4:3-4. Lewdness, lust, revelries. He goes on to say, these people who speak evil of you, they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. For this reason, the gospel was preached also to those who are dead, that they might be judged according to men in the flesh, but live according to God in the spirit. In other words, we are to put to death the things of the flesh and live according to God in the Spirit. And it doesn't matter what men say to us or about us. What matters is that we're striving to please the Lord in what we do. These are wells speaking by false teachers. These are wells without water, clouds carried by tempest, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. For when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, they allure through the lust of the flesh, through lewdness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. And again, 1 John 2:15-17, do not love the world nor the things in the world, for anyone who loves the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it, that he who does the will of God abides forever. In his last epistle, Paul tells Timothy, be diligent to come to me quickly, for Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica. Questions for Galatia, Titus for Dalmatia. Timothy has been in Ephesus, but now Paul needs him there in Rome, his second imprisonment. And whatever role Demas had been filling as a co-worker of Christ, he had forsaken, or Paul, he had forsaken Paul, having loved this present world. I want to close by telling you of a man Bill Hall was studying with in Canada. When the subject of dancing came up, this man said, but dancing is my life. Well, what did Jesus say? He that's willing to lose his life for my sake shall have it. But he who would save his life would lose it. And if you're